riding the wave of wisdom from coast to coast in Florida. This is the Proverbial Lawyer Radio Talk Show, taking your calls and seeking to solve your problems by the book, the Bible, our supreme source of wisdom for today's problems. Your host has been practicing law for over 30 years. He's admitted to practice in 4 states, and here he is, the Proverbial Lawyer, James Bruner.
Thank you, Doug Apple. Welcome to another edition of the Proverbial Lawyer. So pleased to be with you on this Saturday morning. Today, a special show with those who help us out in the personal injury area. Again, we have Scott and Wallace on the line. In fact, we have partner Clint Wallace. We're used to listening to Robert Scott wax and wane eloquently on personal injury, but we have Clint Wallace on the line. Good morning, Clint. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. You know, as we reach out to our listeners, a lot in the Christian community, we in the Proverbial Lawyer like to reach out to wise people to get counsel. We get counsel, sure, from the Word of God, sure, from the law when we actually read the letter of the law. This advises us on our conduct. But sometimes we need to bring wise people together and get consult. And that's Proverbs 11:14, where there is no counsel, the people fail. But in the counsel of the multitude, there is safety. And that's what's nice about Scott and Wallace. They have a free consultation, and you can find out about your case without any kind of obligation. Is that right, Clint?
That's right. That's right. We're always happy to talk to people and answer questions and see if it's something that we can help them with.
Excellent. Well, we invite our listeners to participate in the Proverbial Lawyer, and they can do so by going to theproverbiallawyer.com and filling out a contact form there with their questions, with their legal questions, or you can call us at 855-I-GET-LAW. That's 855-I-GET-LAW. For the numerically minded, that's 855-443-8529. And Clint, if it's all right with you, I'm going to run a question by. We have Dora from St. Mark's writing into the Proverbial Lawyer. You ready for this, Clint?
Sure.
All right. Dear Proverbial Lawyer, I had a car accident involving me and another car. I was driving and the car in front of me slammed on their brakes. I slammed on my brakes and literally slid into and tapped their bumper with my bumper. I left my vehicle to check on the condition of the driver of the other car. I am a former EMT. All right, Dora. I immediately noticed that the driver was not wearing a seatbelt. I also noticed a workman in front of his vehicle, which is why he slammed on his brakes. The worker was stopping traffic by simply standing in front of oncoming traffic and raising his hands out with his palms facing the driver. He had no stop or slow sign and no flags. He was wearing a yellow vest. The driver at first said there was no damage and he was fine and got back into his car. The worker asked that we pull off the road, so we did. As we were stood there talking, suddenly he complained of a stiff neck. According to the responding officer's report, there was no damage to either vehicle. The truth is, there was no damage to the other vehicle, but my new truck had a small crack on the bumper. No one was ticketed for the accident because the responding officer said there was no damage and that he only filled out a report because the other driver complained of neck pain and requested medical assistance and was taken away by an ambulance. The very next morning, I got a call from the other driver's insurance, and now not only is he claiming injuries, he's claiming damage to his car. Thank the Lord, when they took him away by ambulance, I got pictures of his vehicle and mine. Am I really at fault for the accident, even though I didn't get a ticket and the worker was not in compliance of having a hand sign or a flag, is it automatically my fault because I hit another vehicle from behind? I'm grateful no one was seriously hurt, and I'm praising God that I didn't hit the other car hard enough to push him forward into the worker. I couldn't even see the worker until he was standing up outside of my vehicle. I didn't swerve because, to be honest, I thought I was stopping in time from hitting him, and I was just a tad short and tapped him. I'm a strong believer, and I want to do what is right, but I don't want to condone any insurance fraud in any way. What do you think I should do? I love your show, and thank you for anything helpful. Well, thank you, Dora, for listening and writing in. Clint Wallace of Scott and Wallace, what are some of your initial thoughts on this fact pattern?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you, Dora, for the question. I'm sorry that you're involved in this accident. The first thing you should do, and you likely have already done this, is notify your insurance company. When you purchase insurance, not only do they indemnify you for any damages that you may be liable for, but also part of your policy is that they will mount a defense and pay for that defense for you. You want to make sure that you call and report this to your insurance company so that they can get started defending you in this. Pursuant to Florida law, there's a rebuttable presumption of negligence in the event that you rear end somebody. And so the law starts out with the presumption that you had fault here for rear ending somebody. But that's not where it stops. Your insurance company is going to put up a defense for you. Okay, and there's defenses here potentially that would absolve you of liability. Florida is a pure comparative fault state for purposes of determining negligence. What that means is if the case were tried to a jury, the jury would get a form and they would have to allocate fault to any of the potential parties that may have fault here in this accident. And you've identified there's your vehicle, there's the car in front of you that it sounds like stopped suddenly, potentially, and then there's the construction company or the flagman that worked for them. And so what your attorneys would do, or the insurance company's attorneys, is talk about other actors that may have a fault, may have some fault as a result of this accident. Okay, first, the flagman for the construction company. I don't know that he was complying with all the Florida laws and codes that are required regarding signage and warning and things like that to notify drivers that they're going to have to stop soon. Your details of your question, you know, your insurance company would want to get more about what was out there. And it sounds like you took some pictures, which is always a good thing. Anytime you're in an accident, the best thing to do is to take pictures, make sure you write down any statements that any party made because those could become important later. And so the one of your potential defenses may be that the construction companies at fault for this, that they didn't properly put signage up to warn motorists, that they weren't, you know, wearing their orange colors or have the proper flag to alert drivers. That may very well be what happened here. Additionally, another potential defense may be that the car in front of you stopped suddenly, that he wasn't paying attention, he or she wasn't paying attention, and that that's what caused the accident. And so your attorneys or your insurance company would want to investigate that. But that's how comparative fault works.
And so we've got you've got a rebuttable presumption and comparative fault, kind of some big words, but so when, just kind of going back through that, when you rear end someone, instead of it being conclusively your fault in all cases, what you're telling us, Clint, is that there is a presumption that it is your fault, but it's rebuttable.
Correct. What would happen in this scenario, if the case were tried, is a judge would tell the jury that you're to assume that Dora is at fault because she ran into the back of the vehicle in front of her. However, you can consider Dora's arguments that she made to see if she rebutted that presumption.
Okay.
And Dora's defense would entail some of the arguments that we talked about, that the construction company was at fault or that the car in front of her wasn't paying attention and stopped suddenly.
All right. And so if that fault of the other people can be brought forward, it is required under Florida law to be considered. And how does it, and you called that comparative fault. How does that actually work? Like if they say, well, the total damages to the plaintiff is, you know, $20,000.
Sure.
How do you value in that comparative fault, though?
Sure. What would happen is the attorneys and the judge would ask a jury if they thought the damages were $20,000, then the jury would have to assign percentages of fault to any of the actors in the case. And here it sounds like there would likely be three potential actors. There would be Dora, the car in front of her that she hit, and the construction company who employed the flagman. And the jury would award or assign, the better word, percentages between 0% and 100% to each of those actors. And so let's say in a scenario that the jury thought that each of the actors was a third at fault, that Dora had a third of the fault, that the construction company had a third of the fault, and that the car in front of her had a third of the fault. Well, if they thought the case was worth $20,000, then the driver in front of her would collect a third of that from Dora's insurance company. So he would collect $6,666 from Dora's insurance company. Additionally, he would collect $6,666 from the construction company's insurance company. And one-third percentage of fault that the driver in front of her had, he wouldn't collect because that was his portion of the damages, and you can't collect from yourself for causing your own injury.
Right.
So that's how that would play out.
Okay. So where does PIP come in? What does that stand for? Personal injury?
Sure.
Protection?
PIP stands for personal injury protection. And this is a good segue into the different portions of the insurance policy that Dora and any other Florida driver is going to have. In Florida, you oftentimes hear insurance companies say the term full coverage. And it's a misnomer that I don't like that they use. And what that really means is that you have the minimum coverage required by law, which in Florida, every insurance policy sold in Florida has $10,000 worth of personal injury protection and $10,000 worth of property damage. Okay, so we'll start with PIP. Personal injury protection, Florida is a no-fault state for PIP purposes. So whenever you're in a car accident, no matter who's at fault, your own car insurance policy pays 80% of your medical bills up to a $10,000 policy limit. So in this case, Dora, it sounds like luckily wasn't hurt, and so it doesn't sound like she'll have any medical bills. But if she did, whether or not she's at fault, her own car insurance is going to pay 80% of those medical bills. Similarly, the car in front of her, whether or not that person has fault, his or her own car insurance is going to pay 80% of her medical bills up to that $10,000 limit. Now, Dora also, given that she's a St. Mark's resident and has a Florida policy, is going to have $10,000 in property damage. That's the minimum that every policy has. She may have more than that. So as long as the property damage that the car in front of her sustained isn't more than $10,000, then she'll have coverage for that. Okay. Now, what Dora will want to do, and what everyone should take the time to do, especially before you have an accident, is take a look at your policy, because in addition to those minimum required coverages, there's other coverages that you want to make sure that you have. And the first of those is called bodily injury coverage. That's the portion of your policy that protects you in the event that your negligence injures somebody. So here, if Dora carried bodily injury coverage and the driver in front of her pursues a claim for his or her injuries and is successful, then Dora's insurance bodily injury portion of her insurance policy will compensate that driver so that Dora isn't personally responsible for that.
All right. So Now, is bodily injury an add-on to your policy? Like you could be driving out there without having bodily injury coverage in your policy, and you're completely legal, but you may be half naked because if this kind of thing happens, and the other driver that, say, you hurt uses up their $10,000 of, you know, PIP on their own policy, and they're going into $11,000, $12,000, $13,000, $15,000, $30,000, that overage of the PIP on their policy, they're going to be looking to you personally to pay if you don't have bodily injury coverage. Is that fair to say?
That is fair to say. It's accurate, and you definitely want to make sure that you carry bodily injury coverage. And it's not only that they'll look to you after they've exhausted their $10,000 in PIP. Remember, PIP only pays DORA 80% of their medical bills. So from the beginning, they're going to have 20% of their medical bills that are either paid by their health insurance or outstanding for them if they don't have health insurance.
Right.
So they're likely going to have out-of-pocket expenses from the beginning. And you want to make sure you carry bodily injury coverage. And the general guideline is that you want to make sure you carry enough to cover your net worth. Okay, and the reason for that is in the event that you hurt somebody really badly and the value of their case is a lot, you want to make sure that you have insurance coverage to protect you there so that your financial future is protected by having insurance.
All
you're
right.
Not personally liable for an amount that can devastate you financially.
All right. So to our listeners, go check your policies, check your bodily injury coverage, figure out your net worth, see if you're being covered enough. We're talking with Clint Wallace of Scott & Wallace, and they're the personal injury law firm here in Tallahassee. When we get back from the break, we're going to talk a little bit more about these insurance coverages. And then I've got a question for Clint on how do you put a value on pain and suffering? Stay with us on The Proverbial Lawyer.
Car accident attorney, Scott & Wallace, 222-7777, Tallahassee.
Dog bite attorney, Scott & Wallace, 222-7777.
Welcome back to The Proverbial Lawyer. James Bruner here with you, and we're talking with Clint Wallace of Scott & Wallace. They're here in Tallahassee. They take personal injury cases throughout the Big Bend area. Clint, I understand you even take cases in Georgia.
That's correct. We have an office in Thomasville, and we have bar licenses in Florida, Georgia, and Alabama.
Well, very good. And if one of our listeners wanted to set up a call or a meeting with you, how do they reach out to you? What's your number, please?
Sure. In Florida, it's 850-222-7777. And then our Georgia office number is 229-236-3636.
How do you get those good phone numbers? My law office is like, you got to memorize the darn thing. Yours is beautiful. How do you get those numbers?
I hear you. It's living right, I guess.
Yeah, good for you. Well, I love your new offices on East Brevard Street. You've renovated that building very nicely. Plenty of parking over there. It's a pleasure to visit your office.
Well, thank you, James. We like it over here, and I live right behind the office and can walk to work.
Oh, that's great. Well, we're talking about Dora's question, and she rear-ended someone. We've found out that it's a rebuttable presumption of negligence on her part. She gets a chance, and I doubt a case of this minor level would ever get to jury, but it's illustrative of the rear-end accidents and what one can argue. She can rebut the presumption that she was negligent by looking at the conduct of the other actors involved in our scenario. We've got a flag waver, and we've got the car in front of her, and And we've been talking about the insurance, how the insurance company would step in, her insurance company would step in and defend her on these things, and how various categories of insurance coverage work to protect each of us. And we had just been talking, we talked about the personal injury protection and the property damage, where in Florida it's only a $10,000 amount for each of those categories that is required by law. And yet bodily injury, a third category of insurance coverage, is not required by law, but it's something that Clint Wallace is telling us we should get to cover any of that overage. So if that other party is hurt more than that $10,000 limit, plus the 20% copay, that you have something in your insurance policy, your auto insurance policy, that covers that overage. And we call that bodily injury. And what, Clint, can you just like pick a number out of the sky and say, oh, I want the max bodily injury, or do the insurance companies go, no, we're only going to give you bodily injury coverage up to what you can prove your net worth to be? Or can you just pick a number?
Sure. No, generally, you can purchase insurance in any amount you're willing to pay for. Bodily injury comes whenever you see a bodily injury policy. There's two numbers. For instance, it may say a $10,000/$20,000. What that means is, if you're in an accident and you injure any one person, the most the insurance company would pay one person is $10,000. The second number, the $20,000, is the most the insurance company would pay everyone in total that you injured as a result of your negligence. And so if you hit a vehicle that had four people in it and injured them all, then the second number, the $20,000, would be the most the insurance coverage would pay to them collectively if their injuries amounted to that.
And thus exposing you, because if the total injuries are in excess of that $20,000, aggressive plaintiffs will look to what the driver's personal worth is.
Sure, absolutely. Yep. And one of the services that we offer, and it's free, and we've had a lot of people take us up on this, is that if you have an insurance policy, oftentimes they're difficult to understand, and the insurance company doesn't go through and tell you what each thing means and what you ought to have. If you have questions about your insurance policy, you're welcome to pull it out and give us a call, and we can explain, much like we are here, you know, what you have and what likely we think you need.
Oh, that's an awesome service.
And we're happy to do that. Just give us a call if you have questions about it. And we talked a little bit about bodily injury and PIP and property damage. There's a couple of other portions of your policy you're going to want to make sure that you purchase.
Okay.
And in Dora's situation, she would want to see if she had collision coverage. Okay. Collision coverage is the coverage that you carry in the event that her vehicle, Dora's vehicle, is damaged due to Dora's fault, which it may be that she has some fault here. And if so, then her collision coverage would pay to fix her own vehicle. Now, generally, you carry that with a deductible. Typically, you see $500 or $1,000 deductibles, which means if, let's say, Dora's vehicle had $2,000 worth of damage and she had a $500 deductible, that means that Dora would pay the first $500, and then her insurance company would pay the other $1,500 to get her vehicle fixed, the $2,000 worth of damage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's another coverage that you want to make sure that you carry. Perhaps the most important is uninsured or underinsured motorist coverage. Okay, and what that does is you carry that insurance so that if you are injured by someone who doesn't carry bodily injury coverage or doesn't carry enough of it, you've purchased insurance to allow you to have a potential recovery that stands in the shoes of the person who didn't carry bodily injury coverage or enough of it. And studies show that in Florida, about 50% of people don't carry bodily injury coverage. So half the time that you're in an accident, if you're injured, the person that hit you is not going to have the appropriate coverage. And so the way to protect yourself from that is to carry uninsured motorist coverage, and it's relatively cheap for what you get. And so you're going to want to make sure that you look at your insurance policy, and if you don't have it, you're going to want to add uninsured motorist coverage to your policy.
Okay. Is there another category? I've got some questions about claiming on insurance, but any more categories of insurance that we want to see in our policies?
The last that I can think of to talk about today would be, you want to make sure if you're making payments on your vehicle that you have gap coverage the lien holder. And what gap coverage is most people know that when you buy a vehicle and you drive it off the lot, cars depreciate, and they depreciate a lot early on. For instance, if you go buy a car for $20,000, the minute you drive it off that car lot, it's not worth $20,000. It's worth a lot less. And oftentimes, you can owe more on a car than the car is worth. And so, for instance, if you owe $15,000 on a car that's worth $10,000 and you're in an accident, then you may have to not only, if your car is totaled, you lose your car, but you may still have to make payments on a car you don't have anymore. Okay?
Sure.
And the way you protect yourself from that is you purchase gap coverage. And a lot of lien holders, whenever you take a note on a car and you're making payments, they require you to carry it, but not always. And so you're going to want to make sure that you carry that. And that is very cheap for what you get. So that way you're not having to pay for a vehicle that is totaled that you no longer have and not have access to that car. And so
yeah,
that would be another coverage.
That's like adding insult to injury.
Absolutely.
Terrible. Let me ask you about stacking. When I sign up for insurance, they say, do you want it stacked or not stacked? And you'll have to sign this little item. What the heck are they talking about?
Sure, that's a good question, James. You buy uninsured motorist coverage can either come in stacking or non-stacking. Okay, we'll start with non-stacking. What that means is that the numbers we talked about earlier, let's say you have a $10,000/$20,000 uninsured motorist policy that's non-stacking. Yeah. That means if you get in an accident and somebody else causes it and injures you and they don't have insurance or don't have enough insurance, then your uninsured motorist non-stacking policy would pay any one person that was injured, you or any other passengers in your car, $10,000, and would collectively pay the total sum to all persons that were injured, $20,000.
Got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Stacking policy, you stack the number of vehicles that you have under your insurance policy to increase those amounts. So let's say a family has four vehicles, and they have that same $10,000, $20,000 uninsured motorist policy, but this time it's stacking instead of non-stacking. Under that scenario, you multiply those numbers by four. So in that case, they would have access to $40,000 of uninsured motorist coverage for any one person and $80,000 for a total, collective total for any two or more people that are injured.
Got
it. So it's always a good idea to have
stack it. And I think stacking it, if I recall, I mean, of course, numbers mean everything, but I think that's pretty cheap add-on to your policy to say, oh, I'll stack it, please. I think it was like $2, $4, $5 per payment period or something.
That absolutely it is, and the insurance companies recognized that and weren't too keen on having to offer that, and the legislature recognized that and has made insurance companies now have you fill out a form saying that they advised you that you have the right to purchase uninsured motorist coverage, including stacking uninsured motorist coverage, and you have to knowingly reject that and sign a form.
So if you don't sign the form, are you stacked?
If you don't sign the form, then you're deemed to have the same amount of uninsured motorist coverage stacked that you would have bodily injury coverage. Okay, and we see that a lot. I'd say, I don't know, one out of every 20 cases that we look at the rejection form, we see people that didn't purchase uninsured motorist coverage, but the insurance company didn't offer it correctly. And in that scenario, they're deemed to have uninsured motorist coverage because the insurance company didn't comply with what the Florida legislature said they had to do to get this form, a knowing waiver of uninsured motorist coverage.
So that's why the agent kind of tracks you down to get these things signed. If you're trying to just go bare naked minimum under the law, if the agent's on their game, they're going to be tracking you down to get this thing signed so that they don't run afoul of that legislative requirement.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely.
All right. And so any other comments for Dora? She had her damage. She doesn't want to be, you know, what about this? I don't want to participate in insurance fraud. Is this smelling of fraud where she didn't see any injuries and then the guy goes, oh, my neck, and goes off in an ambulance? Any thoughts on that? Or is this just going to be turned over, because it's a small thing, it's going to be turned over to her insurance company, and she's not going to have any power over the moral piece in this thing?
Sure. Well, ultimately, it'll be a business decision for her insurance company to make. She's not participating in any type of fraud as long as she just tells the insurance company what happened, provides them any evidence she has. You know, the other participants in the accident, that will be for them to get with their insurance companies on, and she can't control what they say or what they do. So all she needs to do is just go to her insurance company, obviously tell the truth, and provide any type of evidence she has, and then the insurance company will take it from there and make a business decision as to how they want to handle the situation.
Yeah, I think that's a great answer. You can't be the world's policeman on other people's conduct. You just have to tell it like it is regarding what you saw and your own conduct, and leave it up to good business judgment of the insurance companies as to whether they want to run with a potential fraud angle. Let me ask you, as we're dwindling down in time here, I guess two questions. We all have a fear of say it's a, you know, fender bender and there's just collision, or, you know, just damage, property damage. We have a fear of putting in claims with our insurance company because they're going to jack our rates. Or I remember this one company said they had a word for it. Oh, I'm sorry, your payout on a claim has exceeded your premium. We're dropping you under such and such. And you're like, what? Question, should we have a decent fear about claiming for our contractual rights under insurance policies?
Sure. Well, the answer to that is no, is that making a claim under your insurance policy is not what makes insurance policies go up generally. What makes insurance policies, the price you pay for them, go up is having at-fault accidents. If you cause accidents, and especially the more that you cause, the insurance company sees you as a higher risk to insure versus someone who hasn't caused any accidents. Mm-hmm. So that's what makes your insurance policy go up, not the fact that you made a claim. Now, as far as a worry that an insurance company is going to drop you, I'm always puzzled a little bit by people's allegiance to their own insurance company that they've had, and then they're upset when they get dropped. You're showing the insurance company allegiance by paying your premiums, oftentimes for many years without making claims. And then when you get dropped by the insurance company, it's nature that you want to go back to the same insurance company. Well, they're the ones that just dropped you. And there's hundreds of insurance companies out there. And in a situation like that, there's no reason to have allegiance to any one particular insurance company, especially when they made the choice to drop you.
You're right.
So what I would advise, and I think it's a good idea for everyone, to shop out your policies every year. Get quotes from a few different insurance companies to make sure that you're getting the best coverage you can for the cheapest price that you can. That's always a good idea, and there's no real reason to have allegiance to an insurance company that you.
Mm-hmm. Clint, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, understood. Final question is, and we're switching gears a little bit, is we hear about pain and suffering, and it's a damage. It's a, what they call a non-economic damage. And someone, how do we put a price on pain?
Sure. Well, that can be difficult, and it in large part depends on the degree of pain and suffering that someone's had. I mean, we see cases from cases like Dora's talking about, where luckily it sounds like the injuries aren't going to be very severe, and hopefully everyone recovers, you know, quickly. You also see cases on the other end of the spectrum where people have lost family members, and you know, that obviously the pain and suffering for something like that is going to be a lot greater.
Right.
Ultimately, it's a question for a jury. In any personal injury case, the potential damages you have are medical bills, both past and future, lost wages, both past and future, and pain and suffering. And you know, one of the questions the jury would have to determine is, what has going through this situation, how do we value that? Mm-hmm. And to do that, you hear the evidence about how it's impacted their lives. You know, for a smaller case, it's generally going to be that the person has, you know, had a lot of doctor's appointments, and ultimately the doctor may say that they're back as good as they were before the accident. They're the same person they were before. And in that case, you'd expect the pain and suffering damages to be relatively minor. You know, like I talked about, on the other end of the spectrum, juries sometimes have to consider evidence of someone who's lost a child in a car accident or lost a family member, a spouse. And in that case, obviously the pain and suffering there is going to be on a whole different level. And
yeah.
So, you know, there's no easy way to answer that question, and ultimately be for a jury to decide. And it really depends on the fact, case specific evidence of how this has impacted somebody and how it's changed their life.
Do you get a, we're tight on time. Maybe when we do another interview, we could break that down a little bit, because some people process pain differently than others, and I just wonder if a jury is able to see those nuances. But it's an inexact science, is what you're saying.
It is an inexact science, and I think that's a good idea. We could talk about this for a whole segment, James. But
yeah,
you know, what we see generally is juries get it right. Juries, you know, they apply the facts to the law, and they make good decisions. And our system, while not perfect, is the best that there is in the world. And juries generally get it right. And so I'd be happy to talk about this at length. Maybe we can do that in our next segment.
And
discuss it more.
That'd be great. We've been talking with Clint Wallace of Scott & Wallace here in Tallahassee, and they also have ability to help you in Alabama and Georgia. Clint, I want to thank you for being on The Proverbial Lawyer. We look forward to our next communication.
I look forward to it, too. Thanks for having me on today.
Okay. And there you have it from The Proverbial Lawyer here in Tallahassee. Thanks for listening. You can participate again in The Proverbial Lawyer by going to theproverbiallawyer.com, hit the contact button, and join the show. Thank you for listening. James Bruner out for The Proverbial Lawyer.